Okay, here we go. Anytime. Playdate with Sarah Jones is a production of PRI and Sarah Jones. And listen, if you have little ones running around, there's a bit of grown-up language in this one. But nothing stronger than what you've already heard from, I don't know, the President of the United States.
Hello?
It's Playdate.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Okay, come on up.
Hey, you made it. Shoes off, please. It's New York. It's dirty out there. Through the hallway we go here.
So we're rolling?
We're rolling. It's so delicious.
Rolling, rolling, rolling.
Oh, so sorry. We're rolling. Rolling, rolling, rolling down the river.
I like
rolling
that you go with Tina Turner, and I'm like, rolling, rolling, rolling.
I would keep those wagons rolling. I'm with both. There's probably
went from hoedown to showdown.
And we don't know which one's which.
Okay, so today we are having a play date with my dear friend Elizabeth Gilbert, who, as you probably know, is the author of many books, including Eat, Pray, Love, which was on the New York Times bestseller list. How many weeks was that? I believe the official designation was Forever, and it was turned into a movie with Julia Roberts playing Liz. I mean, come on. And her most recent book is Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear, which you have to get this if you don't have it. I think of it as kind of a Bible for anybody, really, who wants to nurture the creative part of themselves. So needless to say, all of my characters wanted permission to meet you and hang out today, Liz.
Permission granted.
Thank you.
It's so weird to do any kind of a fake voice around you, Sarah. I'm like, oh, you want to hear my little British voice? Permission granted. Is that good?
That's very good.
Thank
permission
you.
Granted. Very good. Oh, well done.
You do it.
We'll both do it. So today you'll be hearing from my alter ego. I don't know if Liz has alter egos. I'm going to ask you about that, actually, Liz, since we're here and I'm being very British and compare-like,
yes,
which I don't think is a word in America, but you'll be all right. Look it up. I want to ask you about this you that you give so generously to the rest of us. How much of you do you have to kind of, I don't know, do you get to play around with voices? Have you ever done that? I haven't heard you do it on stage or, you know, out in the world, but I'd love to hear. Is that a part of your writing self?
Oh, man. It's so funny because I have so many like you. I have so many people living in my head. Mm-hmm. I have made friends with almost all of them at this point. And which I think is where integrity begins, is when all the different strands of yourself kind of make friends with each other.
You're a braid now.
It's a braid. We're all braided together.
But I do think I want to be really specific.
Yep.
You helped me really let my voices, you know, there. I have my characters, but then there's the voice of my fear, right?
Yeah.
There's like Downer Debbie,
yeah,
and like, you know, like terrified Teresa and like all these voices in my head. It really helped me to take your suggestions to sort of embody them, or, you know, like let them have a voice and then sort of picture that cranky, you know, I've heard it called a roommate sitting on your couch. Do you have that kind of image of a...
Yeah, totally. And I know who they are at this point so well. And I know how old they all are.
Mm.
And I know that the younger they are, the more dangerous. And that's not totally true because my creativity is very young, but in the best way, childlike, not childish.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, important distinction.
Right? Very important,
so important
distinction. My fear is childish, but my fear also has an element of being... I like to think of my fear, when I really think of the fear that really shuts me down, I imagine it as my big, dumb, thick-necked hockey-playing cousin.
Oh, God.
Who...
Please don't listen to this.
Is so...
Cousin.
I don't literally have one.
Okay, good.
But I think of it, if I did...
Yes.
Who is actually a really good guy, but just not very smart, right?
Right.
And instinctually, when cornered, reacts with violent overprotectiveness, right? A little bit of Lenny from Of Mice and Men, right?
I will, like, that's pet him and hold him.
A little bit,
right,
of that. So there's a sweetness at the center of my fear. Now that I know him, and it's a male energy, and the way that I speak with him now is so different now that I know him. Mm. Because all he needs is for a calm and intelligent person to explain what's going on. Mm. And then he can relax. And then he's pretty useful to have around, actually, because there are circumstances in our life where we really need our fear.
Need to body check somebody.
Do not get in the car with that guy. Do not trust that person. Do not walk down that particular street at night. Like there. And so the first thing I do now when that fear arises in a circumstance where it's not useful is that I thank him. Like, you've saved my life so many times. You've gotten me out of so many bad situations. I know all you're trying to do is protect me because you look at me and you just see a girl with thin shoulders, right? And you just want to step in that bar and get in between me and whoever's fucking with me. Right. And like, all you know how to do is bash someone against a wall. And there are times when I really need you to do that. But right now, I'm just trying to write a poem.
Now, Liz, I want to tell you something. First of all, my name is Joseph. And this, your fear, he sounds like a good guy, not for nothing.
He's a good guy.
All right. I just want to say that right off the bat. And,
not for nothing.
Not for nothing. This girl. Connecticut. All right. So here's the thing, right? I got to tell you something. I'm maybe not your typical, or maybe I am, but I don't think so. You know, Sarah Jones has me participate in her thing. That she, you know, she calls her one-woman show. And then we come out here and do all the work. She takes all the credit. It's fine. You know, I don't have a problem with that.
You're a working class guy. You're used to that.
You know what? I got to tell you, we're not going to get into populism and all of that. But I do like the fact that you, you know, you're an artist. I don't, you know, do I consider myself an artist? You know, I work. I can build things with my hands. You know, I don't think there's anything, you know, so much better about somebody who had a college education versus another kind of education. I'm very well educated. I can build things. And my neck might be a little thicker than some. That's fair. All right. I took that shot. That's all right. But here's what I want to ask you. You say that everybody can be creative like you or whatever. I mean, I think you say that. I think that's a beautiful idea. All right. I think that's very, what do you call it? Like, you know, big hearted or whatever of you. But I mean, I got to tell you something. When I was a kid, you know, I like to sing, believe it or not. I know you can't hear how, whatever the word is, you know, melodious or something. Is that a word? I think that's a word.
You got it.
Let me get my dictionary app. Anyway, you can't hear that, but I loved the music when I was a kid. You sing in class or whatever. And the teacher would say, whoa, Joe, why don't you just hum? You know what I mean? And, you know, I think it hurt me. You know, I was a little kid and you don't want somebody to tell you, hey, you're terrible or whatever. But I think it's too late. I'm not going to go, what am I going to go sing now? I'm going to be, you know, Michael Bublé. It's not going to happen. So I don't know. I'm not saying you're putting false hopes out there for somebody like me. But, you know, it's nice, the idea. But what am I going to do? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. I'm happy with my life and everything. But sometimes I think, like, not everybody gets to be, you know, what they want to be.
All right. I love you. And look, I got to tell you, in all sincerity.
Yeah, that's how I say
that's,
it.
That's, you're rubbing off on me, Joe.
Hey. Whoa.
Hey, what? Started up rubbing up against me, now you're rubbing up on me. When I wrote this book, right, I wrote this book, Big Magic, and I made the case that everybody has a creative spirit, everybody, non-negotiable. And I've been challenged on that a lot. And I had a reporter say to me, aren't you afraid that you're just going to encourage a bunch of talentless people to make a bunch of shitty art?
All right, that's an asshole.
Don't a call tool, people that. Right?
Yeah, like, that's the guy. That guy's a dick.
Right. Sorry, now that's the asshole version of that question.
Yeah.
Now the more civilized, polite, but still inhumane version of that question comes this way, which is, don't you fear that you're setting people up for disappointment? And when they look, you say everybody has treasures hidden in them. And when you tell people to do that, what if they find out they have nothing? And then you've sent them on a fool's errand, and then their life will be a disappointment. right? Now, that's the polite way to say, aren't you afraid you're going to make a bunch of talentless people do a bunch of shitty art? Yeah. So I'm going to start with the asshole version. My answer to that is my concern with the world is not that it's full of shitty art. I'm not even sure it is. My concern with the world is that it's filled with a bunch of people who are not making anything.
Yeah.
And that we are born to be makers. We have the hands for it. We have the voices for it. We have the souls for it. We have the emotions for it. We have the senses for it. We have the deep memory for it, that we collect all these emotional memories in our lives that we want to do something with. Your ancestors, Joe, my ancestors, they were people who made things in this world. They were not consumers.
No.
They were producers. And the work that they made was not only practical and pragmatic and resourceful. It was beautiful.
Yeah, gorgeous. I mean, it was beautiful. See carvings, my uncle. Oh, my God.
Right? Now you're lucky if you can get a guy to grout your bathtub.
I mean, don't even.
As Tony Soprano once said.
About it.
And so this is our shared human inheritance, because what people did is that they took the necessary and they made it unnecessarily beautiful, because we have an extra need for beauty. All of us do.
It's true.
All of us do, right? So I don't buy that nobody has beauty in them, right? And then to the people who say, well, don't send anybody on a journey where they're going to find nothing and end up disappointed. I say, you show me anyone who ever went on a sincere journey, whether it was psychological, emotional, spiritual, artistic, and came away learning nothing.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as going on a journey into a human soul and coming up empty. There's no such thing as that. No one's ever done it. If you have, you haven't finished looking yet, right?
All right, you're forcing me to make a confession here.
Go ahead.
I've been paying for voice lessons. I didn't want to tell anybody. It's embarrassing.
Joe, can you sing for us a little?
I'm not going to do it right now. I got to warm up. It's, for myself.
Sounds like you're kind of a little scared.
I wouldn't use the word scared. I would say, prudent. but I, you make me feel it's not so bad. I'm doing the lessons, I had one buddy of mine. I told him I was doing it. I thought he was going to make fun of me. He told me, he used to be in a band when he was in high school. And we were talking about, hey, well, what the hell? We can mess around a little bit. He plays guitar and I sing a little bit. I used to bang around on the drums a little bit. I don't know. You're giving me that look.
No, Joe, I got to tell you, look, I've been singing too lately and I'm not a singer. But I love to sing.
We're going to do a duet.
We're going to do it.
That's not what the kids are calling it. I really mean music.
Real music.
We're going to do a duet.
I would love to.
I'm really glad you. All right. You're good. You know what? I knew you were a real deal.
I got to throw one more thing at you, Joe.
All right.
A month ago, I went in a recording studio with a friend of mine who is a musician. We wrote some songs together and performed them. And I told somebody
the next day
that I did it. And she said, what is it for?
And I said,
what is it for?
Yeah. Get rid of her number.
Why does it have to
take
be for
my
a
number?
Thing?
Get rid of her number.
It's for making a thing.
Yeah. I get it. I get you. All right. You want to go get a coffee? All right. Yeah. All right. Sarah's telling me I can't do that.
Joe, it's not that I'm telling you can't go out for coffee with Liz. I'm just saying, I don't want to lose what you're talking about right now. Creativity for its own sake, it's everything. I mean, this idea that just creating is enough. It doesn't have to be about a result or an outcome or some payoff. It's just something that may never end up in a book or on stage. It could just be dinner or how you're the first one on the dance floor at every wedding you attend. How did I know? Yes, I know you. So Liz, with your book, Big Magic, we get to clear away the weeds that keep us from that creativity. And I think that's why Joe wants to have coffee with you. Well, it's probably one of the reasons. But I have a few other friends who are really eager to talk to you. So we'll get to do that right after we take this break. You are listening to Playdate with Sarah Jones. That's me. And we are going to take a little break. But when we're back, Liz Gilbert will talk about the time she had to give a speech to 20,000 people for Oprah. No pressure. And that's coming up in just a moment. Hey, you. Yes, you're the one enjoying Playdate with Sarah Jones, right? You know what you would also like? I mean, you probably already know this because you're a sophisticated podcastinista or whatever. But Studio 360 with Kurt Anderson, it's one of those podcasts that changes your life every week.
I agree, Nereida. Now, I appreciate finding out about these artists who are disrupting the status quo. And Kurt Andersen, the novelist and co-creator of Spy magazine, is our guide to what's happening in the pop culture and arts. You can find Studio 360 on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And I promise you, you will want to tell me. Shukran.
I'm Sarah Jones, and this is Playdate. We are hanging out today with Liz Gilbert. Now, we first met at a TED conference when she gave her talk on creativity, which, by the way, if you haven't watched it, you absolutely must. And I remember my experience of that TED conference. It was my first time. I was giving a talk myself, and I was so worried about my hair, my outfit. You know, what shoes am I going to wear? And here came Liz, who stepped on stage in her bare feet. And I think took us all to this place inside ourselves that everyone in that hall needed. So that same natural, authentic presence, that's one of the things I have loved most about not only being a fan of Liz's work, but getting to know her. And my characters feel the same way, especially Nereida.
You know, you're as real, like when I watch you on Oprah, like some of these other things that you, by the way, like I'm not a stalker or something like that. Like, I just want to say, like, I'm a really normal girl and everything. But, you know, I just think that like you're you like all the time. And how do you do that? Because I think like some people, especially, I'm not going to lie, like, you know, with Instagram and like Twitter and everything like that, like I'm, you know, it's not that I'm trying to be somebody I'm not, but I'm just saying I do, you know, I put on lipstick and everything, like before I, like if I'm going to do a picture about something, like I'm doing my hair or whatever, like I kind of put on makeup before I do my hair. I never do that. That's crazy. But you kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you deal with like, this is me, but this is not me, but this is kind of like me, but it's a little bit better me. Like maybe I could just like be the real me. I don't know. How do you do all of that? Like, how do you manage that?
Okay. I got to tell you, first of all, you know, it's going to make you so happy because I know you love her.
Yes.
Oprah Winfrey's so great.
Oh, I'm really
happy
to
hear
that.
I know someday you're going to meet her.
Someday I'm going to meet her.
You're going to be doing some great work in the world and she's going to see you. She's going to like bring you into her circle. You're going to go to like the Legends Ball.
Well, I have a secret belief that she's part Dominican. I know she did all that genetic testing and everything like that and she found like some people from other places and stuff, but I think Dominican Republic is like just as likely. I just want to like meet her and let her know that that's just as much of a possibility.
Okay, so here's how you be yourself. You be yourself by being all of yourselves. Right? Like, yeah. I mean, everyone's always looking for like, what am I myself? You're all of these things. You're brave, you're scared, you're lost, you're found, you're a teacher, you're a student, you're everything all at the same time. And the first time I went on the Oprah show, I was really nervous and really scared. And a friend of mine said, just bring her everything and everybody that you are. And when she asks a question, whoever speaks up is the one who needs to be talking right then. And it's a good advice kind of just in all situations. But I also had this experience. Now, that was 10 years ago, right? So now a lot's happened to me in the last 10 years. I've been in the public eye a lot more. Now she invited me to do this big like stadium tour with her.
That's amazing. Can we just like pause and say, oh my God, a stadium with Oprah?
Right?
That's like crazy. That's so unbelievable.
I'm not used to speaking to audiences with 20,000 people in the room, right? With the Jumbotron. And I had to give a 50-minute, it was a simple assignment, inspire a stadium with 20,000 people.
Easy.
No problem.
No problem.
Done
oh
and
my God,
done.
Totally. Like,
done and done. Done before
suave,
lunch.
Completamente.
Right?
Don't even worry about it.
So, you know, I did what I do. I worked really hard and I wrote and rewrote and rewrote and rewrote this speech. And then I walked like 10 miles a day, walking it into my memory so that I could have it memorized, which is the only way I can memorize anything.
Oh my God.
And just practicing it on people and refining it. It's like so unspontaneous, right? It's
oh my God. All You're giving me heart palpitations.
Preparation, right?
Yeah.
But then, and I was scared the whole time. And then the first event, I'm standing backstage because that's what we're talking about today, right? And my knees were shaking and my armpits were sending off that stank of nerves, you know? And I could feel that I was really trembly. And I thought, and then I had this thought, I was like, there are times in your life where the greatest gift that you can offer to another human being, especially another woman, is to show them your vulnerability. Let them see your nervousness and your shaking and your fear. This is not one of those times, motherfucker.
I love it.
This is not,
that's not one of those times. Pull it together, mija. Pull it together.
Oprah Gail Winfrey did not bring you here to show women how to be afraid.
Right. No, this is
There's
not the moment.
There's times where that
Fall
it will
apart
be
later.
Your gift.
Fall apart later.
Mm-hmm. She brought you here to show women how to stand in the strength that they have underneath all of that. So get out there and stand on your feet and show them what it looks like to have a voice and what it looks like to know what you know, right? To know and earn what you've learned and to stand in a place of authority and say, this is my truth and this is what I've learned and this is what I believe and this is where it's at. Take it or leave it. If you want to buy it, come along with me. If not, no hard feelings. I'm standing in my presence. This is what it looks like, right? This is what it looks like to have reached an age as a woman where you have trust in what you believe because you've learned it through your own lived experience. Go do that. And the rest of it, don't worry about. And then I could, you know? So there's also, it's a part of like, it doesn't mean that I pretended. It doesn't mean that I neglected or ignored the part of me who was afraid. Mm-hmm. It just means that that was not the place for that part to be revealed.
Not that day. So this is Sarah. I'm so moved by what you're sharing because I think everyone has those moments on whatever scale, right? It might not be 20,000 people in a jumbotron. It might look like showing up for, you know, a meeting with your CFO and you really feel like this could make or break you. But there's that moment where you just tap into the deepest place within you that will tell you with total certainty, this is not going to make or break you because you were born made and you are unbreakable. So I think there's something about trusting others around us. Like when our fear really kicks in and gets going, hi, it's Narita again. I just want to say something. Like Sarah Jones totally interrupted me right there, but I just wanted to say, like, you know, the thing that you were talking about with like being able to show other people, I think that gives me like a strength. And I didn't realize that. That like when somebody else needs you to like step up, when you're sitting there like, oh my God, I can't do it. I'm gonna die. Oh my God. And I can really go there. And as you know, like when I get nervous, I start to talk really fast. Nobody can understand anything I'm saying. It's like very frustrating and everything. But then like when I realize, like, oh, if I don't slow down, people can't understand what I'm saying. And maybe something I'm saying, it might help them. So if I could be helpful to somebody else, maybe that could motivate me to like try to slow down, take a deep breath, get my inhaler. You know what I mean? So thanks, Narita. I wanted to let her have her moment stepping into the fact that power is service. When you step fully into your power, you're actually doing a selfless act that has nothing to do with you. And I think that's, and it doesn't mean I don't love you and everybody doesn't love you and that you weren't important out there on that stage. But as sort of a vessel or like a, you know, you sort of represent something everybody needs to understand about themselves, which is that they are enough.
Yeah.
And I think that's more powerful than whether we feel sweaty and stanky.
Sure.
And whatever.
And of course we feel sweaty and stanky. That's part of it as well, you know. But the thought I had was, Liz, don't come out here and bring these women what they already have in abundance. Mm. What they already have in abundance is insecurity and a lack of self-worth and a fear of disappointing people and a refusal to follow the voice that keeps calling to them. They already have that in spades. Don't bring them more of that.
Right.
You know, like bring them the thing. They came here because there's a scarcity. And the thing that there's a scarcity of is to trust your own path and to trust your own journey and to trust what you already know. Mm. So let me just be the one to show you what that might look like today. Now, tomorrow, I can go to my friend's house and be like, I'm a baby. Today, I'm a tiny baby. You know, like that's a different day. That's for a different day, but not today, you know?
Somebody really wants to get involved here.
Hi, Liz. I'm Bella. I haven't seen you in so long. I know. And this is like so amazing to me right now that like I just feel that like if everyone could hear you like talk about the fact that like they have what they need, like I don't always feel that way. Okay, like I pretty much like never feel that way. But like when I hear you, I believe it. Like even just for like that 2 seconds that you're saying it. And that like helps me get to the next 2 seconds. So I guess I wanted to ask you about like, what does it look like for you to like be in right now? Like people talk about that like as artists that like – a lot of what we do is fueled by like fear of like the future. But like for me, like I just feel that like people are like, oh, millennials are not like serious people. And like you can't like trust them. They're too entitled. I'm like, oh, whatever. But I just feel like you don't know where I'm going to be in the future. Like you might need a job and I might be giving it to you. So like, why don't I just like think about right now and just be like the best person I can be like right now and not worry? And I just wanted to ask you about that because you seem like you really don't worry too much. Like, how do people do that with their art, but like with their life?
Oh, Bella, you know I love millennials. You know I'm always defending you guys.
I thought you just loved me.
Well, I love you because you're my representative millennial.
Totally. I am here.
You are the weapon. You are like the cast from which the rest of them are made.
Yeah.
But I do think that you, lovely, you and your generation are the least aggressive, most compassionate. You were taught not to bully. Yeah. You weren't raised by people who said, you know how we're going to make our kids? We're going to toughen them up to show them how tough the world is. You were raised by people who are like, you're important and everyone's important. And you care about people more than any generation that has come before you. And I like you guys for that.
Thank you.
I know you don't get enough praise.
I know.
Everybody's always on you guys, but I love you.
I know. And also, weekly massage is like not indulgent. If it enables you to build more houses when you do your summer internship at Habitat for Humanity. So I just feel that like balance is like so important. And I think you're a really like amazing, like rad role model for that. But like, I want to ask you like, yeah, like what would you say to like people who like for them hearing about like successful artists makes them worried that like, oh, but I'll never be that. Not just that like, I'm scared I'll go find treasure and it won't be there, but like, I'll go find treasure and it'll just be like a Metro card and like a couple of like pieces of lint. Like it's not enough and other people have like millions and billions of followers and I don't. Like, what do you say to people who like, Sarah Jones talks about it all the time, like compare and despair. She got that from like somewhere.
From like a tea bag.
Yeah, probably a tea bag. She drinks a lot of tea.
So my friend Ann Patchett, who's a great novelist and a dear friend of mine, has, I think, the best operative metaphor for how to make your work and how to not make your work. And so she talks about how her favorite part of the creative process is before she actually begins to write, because then it gets to be perfect. Because before you make something, it always gets to be perfect, right? Before it exists in the world, when it's only in your imagination, it can be anything, right? So her dream is that what happens is that she spends a couple years dreaming about her novel and it's all hers. It's her precious. It's all hers. It's all hers. And she is alone with it and it's beautiful, her novel, yeah. Her idea. It's so beautiful and she can see it. She describes it as like an amethyst butterfly that's floating around her head and only she can see it. And it's the most immaculate, perfect thing that has never been made.
That
right?
Sounds like something from Lemonade.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Maybe Beyonce and Ann Patchett should totally like partner. But please keep going. This is rad.
So she loves that because no one has criticized it. She hasn't tried to make it yet.
Right.
So because it hasn't tried to be made yet, it gets to be this jeweled creature of perfect light that we all want to make in the world, right?
Amazing.
And then the day comes when she has to transition to actually being a human being, making something in a material world rather than a person dreaming of a perfected thing. And in that moment, she has to pluck that imaginary amethyst butterfly out of the sky, put it on her desk, and smash it into 1,000 pieces
oh
with
my
a
God.
Hammer because it has to die. The dream of that has to die so she can make the real one. And the real one, like when you said a Metro card and pieces of lint, like when I try to, every butterfly I've tried to make as an amethyst perfect sparkling butterfly, once it's made, it's like this jacked up thing that's like baseball cards and chewing gum and bits of tacks.
Yeah,
and,
this and is like not where I thought this was going.
And when it's, but the loving artist,
yeah,
right? You make the thing and then the truly self-loving and world-loving and life-affirming artist, you look at that like such a bad replica of the dream of the perfect thing that you wanted to make. But I like the real thing better because it's a real thing.
Okay.
And the dream isn't a thing.
Can we have a little bit of like, could we just like sprinkle some amethyst dust on the like crappy
if
one?
If you can gin up and cough up some amethyst dust to cover the cat hairball that is your piece of art, that's great.
Yeah.
But the other thing I always feel when I hold on to my weird cat hairball that's covered with sparkling amethyst dust is no one ever made one like this before. And that's cool.
That's really
and it
rad.
Means that I also showed up and co-created my own life. And that's cool.
That is super
and that's
rad.
Worth doing. And I would rather, and Anne would rather, make the jacked up, bent up thing that people may or may not like, that you may or may not like, than live making nothing and dreaming of amethyst butterflies that can never be real.
I want to say I am really grateful to be reminded that part of the work that goes into what happens on stage, what happens on in our books, what happens in front of the Jumbotron and the 20,000 people with Oprah, all of that is about relinquishing the dream of something perfect, which can never exist, in favor of, you know, it's like letting go of perfect so you can have good or even great. But like really for people who I, as a, you know, recovering perfectionist, nothing is more motivating and soothing and kind of awe-inspiring than remembering that, you know, that illusion of perfection, it's a trap. It's really a trap. And I used to think it was a compliment when people would say, you're such a perfectionist. I'm like, oh, thank you so much.
Well, why, yes, I am.
Thank you.
It's my biggest flaw.
It's why I can't get out of bed. Because I can't get out of bed perfectly.
And it's like, wow, just get out of bed. Yeah. Just put your feet on the floor. Yeah. Stumble, fumble if you have to.
Co-create.
Just do it. Done is good.
Done is better than good.
Done is better than good. Liz Gilbert,
you
are better than good, girl.
Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah.
Thanks for all
of you're the real deal, Liz.
Thanks, Joe.
All right. Coffee? I'm just saying. You never answer.
Oh, Joey. He just could not get enough of Elizabeth Gilbert. She is taken, Joey. But if you also couldn't get enough of Elizabeth Gilbert or Playdate with Sarah Jones, visit us at our website. It's pri.org/playdate, or you can visit sarahjonesonline.com.
Playdate with Sarah Jones is a co-production of Sarah Jones and PRI. It's produced by Julie Burstein with sound design by Derek John. Kate Essig is our assistant producer, and our production coordinator is Anna Avalon. Hey, Avalon.
Oh, you know what we would love? If you could leave us a review on iTunes, or you could just, you know, give us 5 stars, only if you think we earned it. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Hasta la próxima!